Well, with that, let's get into today's topic. Again, we have with us Brad Smith, the North Idaho Director of the Idaho Conservation League, and Jennifer Ekstrom, who has a new role, the North Idaho Lakes Conservation Associate. Again, Brad and Jennifer, thanks for being here. And Brad, let's start out with you. Why don't you briefly tell us about, you know, what is ICL, as we call it, Idaho Conservation League, and what's the mission? What do you do?
Yeah, the Idaho Conservation League was founded in 1973. So if you do the math, our 50th anniversary is next year. So we're pretty excited about that. But we were formed to be the voice for conservation in the Idaho legislature. At that time, there were small environmental groups around the state. Some of you may remember Panhandle Environmental League.
I do remember locally. It personally. That was a long time ago when that was happening.
Yeah. Yep. I think there might still be some folding chairs down at the community hall with Pell on the back. But it was recognized at that time that all these small groups needed a voice in the legislature. So ICL was formed to be the voice for all those small groups, and we were an actual league of small groups at that time. We no longer have that chapter structure, but the name persists. And since then, we've grown, and we have all sorts of programs. Our mission, basically, is to protect Idaho's environment. But our primary strategic campaigns right now are protecting Idaho's public lands, combating climate change, returning salmon and steelhead to the Snake River and Salmon River drainages, cleaning up the Snake River in southern Idaho. And then more recently, we added our Lakes Conservation Program. So we're super excited because those are resources that really define this region of the state.
You mentioned that originally Idaho Conservation League started as an advocacy group in the legislature, a voice in the legislature in Idaho for all these smaller groups. Do you still have a voice in Boise?
Yes, we still have a full-time lobbyist down at the State House, but now we've grown from the staff of one person in 1973 to about 30 today, working on all those programs that I talked about. And then we have four offices. Boise, of course, is our central office, but we have offices also in Sun Valley, McCall, and then the Sandpoint office, which was opened by Susan Drumheller, who you may be familiar with, in 2008. I started working for the Sandpoint office in 2011, and my role is to oversee this office, but also to work on public lands issues and wildlife issues in the northern part of the state. Mm-hmm.
So one thing that I've always wondered about a little bit, because Coeur d'Alene in North Idaho is the bigger population center, why the ICL located its office in Sandpoint. Not to say we don't like it here. We do like having that access to the issues that you deal with. But what was the rationale there?
Yeah, it was kind of a few things. One, Rick Price, who you may also know, was on our board at that time, and he was very influential in asking our board and talking our board into opening a North Idaho office. But we were also having other members of the community in Sandpoint asking for a presence in North Idaho. And so that calling really is why we ended up opening the office mm-hmm. here.
Good job, Rick. And Susan, the first yep. director up here. Well, that's a good segue into Jennifer, because not only are you, do we have the ICL office, we have the biggest lake in the entire state here. And Jennifer, your new position is North Idaho Lakes Conservation Associate. Why don't you give us first some of your background? Tell us a little bit about your story and your education and your career path that got you to this point.
Thanks so much. So I grew up in northeastern Washington. And so from a very young age, I developed a keen sense of the importance of our natural resources and the importance of protecting them from numerous threats that they face. And so with that, I got into environmental advocacy at a pretty young age, and I've been doing that most of my life. When I had the opportunity to move up here to the Sandpoint area in about 2006, I was super, super grateful shortly thereafter to help start the Lake Pend'Oreille Waterkeeper organization, working closely with Steve Holt on that. So it was sort of a nice segue into living here in Idaho.
And speaking of the waterkeeper, so what has happened here is that the waterkeeper, which ran from 2006 until just last year, I think, basically they handed off their role in lake monitoring and the advocacy they have to maintain a healthy lake to ICL. Now, how and why did that come about?
Yeah, about a year ago, Steve Holt, the executive director of the Waterkeeper, approached us about moving the program over to ICL. Steve was really interested in retiring and spending more time fishing, which I'm a bit envious about because I'd like to fish more too. But Steve was ready to retire and felt like he spent the majority of his time just keeping the organization financially solvent and not as much time doing the advocacy work. I think, you know, for small organizations, it's really hard these days to keep them alive. And he wanted to make sure that there was a permanent home for lakes advocacy and making sure that we protect our special waterways like Lake Pendere. And so he approached ICL and we were like, yeah, we should take on this program. Why wouldn't we work on protecting Lake Pendere? In fact, we should work on protecting all of our precious waterways here in North Idaho, because not only do we have Lake Pendere, but we have Priest Lake, we have Lake Coeur d'Alene.
Lots of small lakes as well. I don't know if you're going to, you know, deal with like Kokalala and Mirror Lake and Gamlin and all these other, we have dozens of lakes.
No shortage of water. Yeah. And also right now we're pretty actively involved with other organizations in Montana and British Columbia in trying to deal with mining pollution in the Kootenai River that's coming from the mountaintop removal coal mines near Fernie, British Columbia. So there's no shortage of water and no shortage of issues affecting those waterways. So when Steve approached us, it just made sense that we would take on this program.
Mm-hmm. So Steve's going to have more time to fish. I hope he works on his jump shot too. I mean,
I have not seen him play basketball, so I can't attest to his skills on that.
Okay. With taking on the Lake Pendere Waterkeeper job and their mission, did you add more? Is that where Jennifer's job kind of came into being, to add that extra component to the current staff in Sandpoint?
That's correct. The transition of the program did come with some commitments from the Equinox Foundation, the Confidence Foundation, and the Songham Foundation, so that we could have the capacity and hire someone. And we were very fortunate to be able to hire Jennifer, who already had a background in this work. So we're very fortunate.
So, Jennifer, tell us about what kind of work you're going to do. I know that water monitoring is a big part of what Waterkeeper did, but tell us more about what that program really entails, as well as, you know, how do you use that data?
That's a great question. So, as you said, the water quality monitoring work in Lake Pendere is a really important part of the work that we do, and it's important because it guides our advocacy work for the Pendere system and really helps us pinpoint the areas that need extra attention and that are facing greater threats than others. For example, right now, I would say Boyer Slough is one of the most compromised portions of this whole Pendere system. And there's a number of factors that are creating that problem for Boyer Slough, including development, increasing population, inappropriate shoreline developments, as well as inadequate wastewater treatment right now in that area. And so because of the water quality monitoring data, we really see scientific evidence that we need to focus more attention on that area and really hold our agencies and developers and the sewer district to account to make sure that they clean up their act. We're right now involved with a watershed advisory group developing a cleanup plan for that slough. And that's convened by the Department of Environmental Quality, and it includes stakeholders from throughout the community. And we're really hopeful that we'll be able to come up with a plan with really defined steps that are needed to bring that slough back to water quality, back to a a state of water quality that supports swimming and drinking and fishing and that sort of thing for our community for the future.
It sounds like once you lose clean water, it's hard to get it back, so you're trying to get ahead of the potential pollution. But I'm wondering where you integrate and cooperate and collaborate with these agencies that you say actually have the capacity and the mandate to make decisions that will influence that goal.
Right now, with the increasing population, the reality is that we're all a part of the problem. And the beauty is that we all can be a part of solutions. And so whether that's an individual that's making better decisions with fertilizers on their lawns or with not disturbing sediment along the shoreline, or if that's in terms of an agency, which the Idaho Department of Lands, the Department of Environmental Quality, the county government, the federal agencies, they all have a part in looking to the future. And right now, with population increasing there and with climate change, there is a real need and a real opportunity to refine the approaches that these agencies are taking when it comes to protecting our natural resources. And I'm seeing an openness for new information. I had a conversation with Idaho Department of Lands just the other day about their practices of just rubber stamping riprap. Riprap is when you place large boulders along the shoreline in order to stabilize the shorelines. They're really open to new ideas about how those processes could take place that were more conducive to protecting water quality, for instance, including native vegetation in those construction projects. Mm-hmm. So I'm hopeful about working with agencies in the future and refining their practices and refining their policies to better protect these amazing lakes for the future.
Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in Boyer Slough specifically because there's been a lot of development. This is out Whiskey Jack Road to get to that. I did see, it was maybe 2 years ago, a housing development that was going up. I'm not sure if it's houses or condos. I think it's probably maybe condos. Right on the edge of the slough where they cut all vegetation down completely to the edge of the water. And my question was, is that even legal? Did they compromise environmental protection there? Did they break the law, basically?
They did break the law in that situation, and they were fined a small amount for that illegal action that they took by denuding the shoreline all the way down to the waterline. There's 8 lots along the shoreline that are slated to be developed. Right now, the developer has started the process of getting permits to put that, what I called riprap. It's a strange word, but putting the rocks along the shoreline and putting docks out into the slough. A number of the neighbors challenged the docks, and so we had a hearing just a couple days ago on Monday about that issue. And talking with the developer and talking with the Idaho Department of Lands about the problems with that development, it's absolutely not an ideal place to develop. And what we're seeing, because of the population increase that we're seeing across the world, but here in North Idaho specifically with the people who have been moving up here in recent years, is that the prime places, the easy places to develop, the places that are conducive to new homes have already been developed. And so now developers are looking at really marginal places. We're seeing a lot of developments being proposed in wetlands, in really prime, important wetlands. We're seeing them on places like Boyer Slough, which just simply cannot accommodate any more pollution. And it's inevitable that, for instance, that development in the Whiskey Jack neighborhood is going to impact the slough with more pollution when sediment gets disturbed during the construction process, when those lawns are put in down to the shoreline. I'll circle back to your question of if they broke the law. Yes, they broke the law in disturbing all that soil and denuding the lots without a permit, but then they also broke the county codes, which call for a 40-foot setback. So anyone who has any property on the shoreline of our lakes in Bonner County is supposed to maintain a vegetative buffer for 40 feet back from the shoreline. But what we often see is that lawns are put in right up to the shoreline, and then those fertilizers go straight into the waterways. And so in that case on Whiskey Jack, that rule was also broken. Our county codes were broken.
Mm-hmm. So that's a problem that individual property owners could themselves address, this idea that they have to have a lawn right to the edge of the water. And, of course, most people that have nice lawns, they want to put chemicals on them to help them grow and keep down weeds and so on. Are you making any progress in educating property owners about the cumulative impact of this? They think their own little property, oh, it's not going to make that big of a difference. But when you add up all the cumulative impacts, it makes a big difference to the water quality.
That is such an important point. We are all, it's like death by a thousand cuts. It was 25 years ago that it was identified by the Department of Environmental Quality and others that the near shore area of the lake, which is the area of the lake that's close to the shoreline, approximately within 50 feet of the shoreline, that is the area of the lake that is most compromised. And a cleanup plan was written 20 years ago for that. But what we've seen is that as more people move in and more people want to be on the lake because it's beautiful and wonderful, every individual action, as you said, it adds up to a total sum of we aren't, despite the cleanup plan that was put in place 20 years ago, we really haven't made much progress in cleaning up that area of the lake. And now is the time to do it before it's too late. This phosphorus that comes into the water body through the sediment and through the fertilizers and through the sewage discharges, that phosphorus feeds toxic algae, that phosphorus feeds the invasive weeds that make it really hard to get out of our docks or difficult to swim in the lake. And so there's no time like the present, and every individual can make a big difference. If you have a lawn down to the lake, think about replanting that with native vegetation, or think about just not fertilizing it.
It brings to mind that education and awareness is a huge part of, because like you said, Chris, property owners might not know about the phosphorus and these things bubbling up because of their own private practices. So whose job is it to educate everyone, first of all, about the gem that we have here and taking care of it before it's too late? How can an organization like Idaho Conservation League become part of the actual solution on the basic level with homeowners and everyone else in the county?
Well, it's so great to collaborate with the radio station and get the word out right here, right now. And it's great that all of the listeners right now that they have this information, they can tell their friends, they can share it with other people, they can tell people that Idaho Conservation League is now doing this work. People can call us if they want to get involved or if they have questions about what they should do. The phone number people can call is 318-5812. And we're happy to help send people in the right direction, and just so grateful to all the listeners today on KRFY who are becoming educated. So thanks for your partnership.
I have an idea. I think we should have a program. I think you guys could have a program here on KRFY. It's a neutral subject. It's about protecting our beautiful spot on Earth here and this beautiful lake. And so we could have an environmental program that is specifically for bringing this information over and over and over again in different ways and to the listeners, and broadcasting that we have this program people can tune into. So we'll talk about that later, right?
There
cool
you go,
idea.
Susie. Things happen right
always
here
thinking
in this
about
studio.
The programming.
We're having trainings in February, so I'll get a hold of you.
To circle back on the question of the water quality. So In about 2006, when waterkeepers started, they had the water monitoring program. Was there a water monitoring program that they inherited from like PEL or some previous group?
Actually, I was fortunate to get to help develop that initial program starting in about 2010. We developed a program in collaboration with the University of Idaho and the Department of Environmental Quality. And that program actually wasn't implemented until the year after I left the area. And so now for 10 years, it's been going on.
So do you see a trend in the data that you've collected over these past 10 years?
The trends really are specific to certain locations, such as Boyer Slough, which I've already mentioned, and we're noticing the problems there are increasing. Other areas sort of fluctuate throughout the year. Like, for instance, phosphorus is at a higher concentration in the spring when there's a lot of movement of water disturbing the shorelines and bringing that sediment into the waterways. But as far as the trajectory over the last 10 years, it's really site-specific where the problems have increased.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is totally anecdotal, but if you're in the lake at, say, City Beach, the water looks pretty good. It's pretty clear. But if you compare that to, say, the water that you, if you're out along the Monarchs, where it's just remarkably clear, you realize that while we may think the water's pretty good at places like City Beach, the lake's lost a lot from what it must have had historically.
I think that that's an astute sort of observation on your part. Absolutely. I was pretty disappointed last summer paddleboarding out from Memorial Park, Memorial Field, and just seeing a bunch of gunk floating in the water, and it made it so I didn't even want to get off my paddleboard and go swimming. So there's definitely work to be done here in the more populated areas, especially.
Mm-hmm. What about invasive species? Are you going to be dealing with that? You know, we have Eurasian milfoil as an issue, and then we have some biological hazards like zebra mussels. And I don't know that – I know we have milfoil. I don't know how much of a problem we have with the mussels right now, and there may be other invasive species that I don't even know about.
There's also the flowering rush, which is another great weed that we have here in the Pend'Oreille system. Sorry, I say great facetiously, but I mean, they're really great at proliferating. I mean, these weeds are meant to grow and they do a very good job of it. As you may know, and as some of your listeners may know, the Lake Pend'Oreille Waterkeeper Organization was founded around bringing into check the herbicides that were being used with pretty lack of discretion, I would say, to combat the Eurasian water milfoil in 2009. Since then, over the 10 years that I've been out of the area, actually, the Eurasian water milfoil seems to have gone into a cycle where it's not proliferating nearly as much. Last summer, there were 42 acres of Eurasian water milfoil that were treated with herbicides in the Pend'Oreille system, which is drastically down from the number of acres that they were treating 15, 10 years ago. And so I do want to point out that 30 of those 42 acres were in Kootenay Bay, which is the receiving water of the water from Boyer Slough, which is so heavily polluted. So that's just a case in point that this pollution, the phosphorus pollution, feeds the weeds in a really tangible way. And so the vast majority of the weeds in our lake right now are in, I shouldn't say weeds, I should say the Eurasian water milfoil are in Kootenay Bay. And I would like to say that the quagga mussels have not yet arrived here. I heard this spring that there was many boats were intercepted on their way to the Flathead Lake area. And so far, I don't think that we have a problem here in Lake Pend'Oreille, but that's definitely something we are looking out for.
Mm-hmm. And if you're just tuning in, this is The Morning Show on 88.5 KRFY. I'm one of the hosts, Chris Bessler, with my co-host, Susie Prez, getting to do it together here today. And we're talking with Brad Smith and Jennifer Ekstrom of the Idaho Conservation League. So another question, maybe Brad knows the answer to this one, being a fisherman, Brad?
Yes, I spent many hours trolling on the lake with my dad and my uncle and my brother, waiting to catch fish.
Yeah, sometimes it can be like, for the big fish, it can be like an 8-hour wait to dial into one of those. But one thing that we do have going on here, and I don't know how active the ICL will be on it. I know we have other groups that are active in the fishing part, the fisheries. But we're getting some species in the lake that weren't here historically, like walleye and pike. Is ICL going to work on any of those kinds of issues, or are you letting other groups take the lead on those?
We haven't traditionally been involved in Idaho Fish and Game's fisheries management planning. To the extent that we're involved in protecting fish, it's been through, making sure that, for example, if you're going to harvest timber on the national forest lands, that we have adequate riparian buffers to protect the water quality that those fish depend on, or the water quality of the lake that those fish depend on. And also for a species like bull trout that is listed as threatened under the Endangered Species Act, we certainly advocate for recovery of those native fish species. And, it's not without controversy, but Idaho Fish and Game does have a gill netting program for lake trout, which do prey on bull trout. And the lake trout are introduced to the lake along with walleye and a host of other species. So, the fisheries in the lake are going to have to be managed in perpetuity to keep the populations of all those native and non-native species in desirable ranges. So we're never going to be able to be hands-off with our fisheries again, and it's a careful balancing act that I think Idaho Fish and Game has to undertake. But we haven't had a strong role in that planning effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is a management issue for Idaho Fish and Game. And I know there are folks that love walleye. They're getting it from all sides. Mm-hmm. There are people that say, we want to have a big walleye fishery. And there are folks that are saying, well, it's not native to this lake, and it can actually harm the other fish populations. So it's a Gordian knot, if you will.
Indeed. And, the fisheries are, of course, a public resource. And Idaho Fish and Game, I think, does the best that they can to sort of balance the desires by anglers for having walleye fishing opportunities or native, like, cutthroat fishing opportunities, for example. And so, it's just a management situation that's going to be something we have to do ongoing.
So let's get back, just one more question on the water monitoring side of things. You have citizen volunteers that help with that, is that correct?
Yes, we have the most amazing citizen scientists who volunteer to make that program work. And those people who do that volunteer work make a huge commitment every summer to come out 5 months in a row for a day each month to take those water samples. And I think it's a pretty great volunteer opportunity too. You have a chance to get out on the water. You can throw your fishing line in if you want, but you also throw in the water sampling device and grab those samples and bring them back to the office. So we couldn't do it without the volunteers. It's a really, really awesome program.
So if there's anybody out there that wants to do a volunteer thing, it's pretty darn fun. Maybe they could get in touch.
They absolutely can get in touch. Again, it's 318-5812. And we would love to have more people on the list. There is a mandatory training they would need to attend in the spring. And we would love to hear from people who want to get involved with that.
Mm-hmm. And so the monitoring season is the training in the spring. And then the season is what, 3 months or something?
5 months, okay. May through September, once a month.
And just listening to Jennifer, to you talk about all of the things about our lake and the water quality and the things that could jeopardize the pristineness of it and the life of it, I think to the Idaho Conservation League, Brad, you're probably, I was thinking of the term tickled pink, that you found Jennifer, because you're so knowledgeable about how to do this. And in that same thought realm, I'm thinking we should have some educational forums that KRFY could actually help sponsor.
Susie, you're just coming out with these
ideas. Oh, my God. It's definitely a passion. I'm so glad that Idaho Conservation League took up the work of the Lake Ponderay Water Keepers. That is really great. So, anyways.
Yeah, it's just a natural thing that we would work on these issues. As I mentioned, the lakes and the waterways that we have here really define this region of the state. You know, if you go to southern Idaho, where they have virtually no water, it's a very different environment up here. So it just made sense when Steve approached us that we would take on this program. And I'm really thrilled that we're doing it and that we have Jennifer to help build the program.
Mm-hmm. So it's not just water monitoring that's part of this program. What other sorts of activities are you going to pursue, Jennifer, in this role?
Well, two of the main priorities, I've already spoken about a bit, bringing into check some of the shoreline developments that are impacting water quality and looking at our sewage treatment. Good morning, everyone. Mm-hmm. I have to talk about sewage, but it's a problem. And as I said before, every single one of us contributes to the problem and every single one of us has an opportunity to contribute to the solutions. And so whether your home is on septic or if you hook up to a sewer district, you can get involved and make sure that it's being managed appropriately so it isn't impacting our waterways. One thing that we would love to see is to have there's five main sewage districts in our region, and we would love to see them all upgrade their facilities and create a regionalized system, or else upgrade their individual facilities. And right now, with infrastructure funding that was allocated from the federal government to the state of Idaho, there is more money available than ever before to allow these districts to upgrade their facilities. The deadline for these facilities to apply for those grants and loans is January 13th, and so they need to get on it. It wouldn't hurt to get phone calls from their customers and ask them if they are applying for grant funding to upgrade their facilities, because really they all need to have some upgrades at this point. These facilities, I'm not picking on Sandpoint, it's the same story all across the country. These facilities were built a long time ago, it's aging infrastructure, and they were built for smaller populations. And now we have more people and we have older technology. There's really great technology available that can actually almost completely remove phosphorus from the systems. And it's not that expensive. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a misconception out there among some of the operators that the upgrades would be very technically challenging to operate and that the upgrades would be very expensive. And with new technology, that's just not the case. It's completely reasonable to think that we can fix these systems in a fairly short amount of time.
Mm. Yeah, Sandpoint actually discharges into the lake, or actually the river. How about Ponderay Kootenai with their sewer system? That discharges as well?
That discharges directly into Boyer Slough.
Okay, that's part of that issue right there.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's a big part of the issue. Yeah. But we do want to make sure that we're doing everything we can and that we're not isolating the sewer district as the only problem when there's other problems mm-hmm. also.
And there's individual septic tanks all mm-hmm. around the lake too that
yes.
can be introducing pollution to the lake as well. So,
I think that you said something really interesting, because we hear about this information and we go, oh, no, well, let's support Idaho Conservation League somehow. But you mentioned that individual homeowners and people who have a sewer district, we all do, talk to the sewer district, remind them that there's federal funds and the deadline is January 13th. And I love what you said, that it is solvable. It just needs to be on the top of the list, it sounds mm-hmm. like.
Thank you for that recap. That was perfect.
So there's also a Lakes Commission that's been around for quite a while, and it works on water quality issues and quantity issues for Lake Ponderay, the Ponderay River, Priest River, and Priest Lake. What is your role vis-a-vis the Lakes Commission?
I really love working with the Lakes Commission. Molly McCann, the executive director, has a wealth of knowledge and history working on these issues in the Ponderay system. The Lakes Commission is a board appointed by the governor to convene groups to discuss these issues of water quality and water quantity. Idaho Conservation League is an advocacy organization, and so I think the two complement each other very well, and I'm really grateful that they're out there doing the work and convening the meetings that they do convene. And in recent years, it seems like they are stepping up more and more and getting engaged on some of these really critical issues that are undermining water quality. For instance, recently we've been collaborating on bringing in to check, trying to stop, let me just say what's the truth. We're trying to stop a development in the Kulin wetlands. The Kulin Chase Lake wetlands are on the southern end of Priest Lake. And this is a super wonderful, beautiful, it's called a class one wetland. It's been identified for, since 1997, the Department of Fish and Game wrote a paper that showcased the Kulin wetlands as super unique, as qualifying to be a research natural area, just the abundance of unique and unique plants and animals in that area is phenomenal. And there's 80 feet, I've been told, 80 feet of peat bog. And now a developer has divided that up into 35 different parcels, and they want to build on every one of those parcels. So we're collaborating very closely with the Lakes Commission to stop that development from happening.
Mm-hmm. And I know the Selkirk Conservation Alliance, that's a prime issue for them. And they're based more in Priest River.
Yes, they're another wonderful partner in this work.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of developments, we have a development proposed at Trestle Creek. It's a marina and some housing. I'm not sure the specifics on that, Brad. Maybe you can fill us in. I know that you've already been active on that.
Yeah. So the proposal out at Trestle Creek is a proposal of the Idaho Club that includes about 105 boat slips and I can't remember if it's 5 or 6 residential lots right there at the mouth of Trestle Creek. And to construct that project, they want to dredge about 14,000 cubic yards of material, including an island out there that all is wetlands and has these beautiful cottonwood galleries and native vegetation. And there's bald eagles roosting out there. There's beavers out there. And if they dredge that area to create the marina, and then they also want to use the dredge material to fill the adjacent wetlands for the residential lots, it would have a huge impact on that area. And Trestle Creek is super important for the fisheries values there. I mean, it's well known for its kokanee fishery because you can go out there to the Avista site and you can actually see the fish spawning, which is a really cool resource.
A lot of people do that. They turn bright red in the fall, and it's really quite a spectacle.
It's so great. I've taken my daughter out there many times. But what you often don't see are the bull trout, which migrate up the creek primarily at nighttime, and then they hide out during the day. So very few people actually see the bull trout. But the bull trout spawning in Trestle Creek accounts for over 50% of the bull trout spawning sites in the Pendere Basin. So that stream alone is responsible for over half the bull trout spawning. And so this development at the mouth of the creek would impact that fishery along with all the other species of wildlife that I mentioned. And I think Trestle Creek is just sort of an example of a lot of the kinds of developments we're seeing right now around the county, like Kulin Wetlands and other places where, as Jennifer mentioned, you know, all the easy developable sites have sort of already been developed. And so now developers are kind of scooping up these environmentally sensitive areas and filling them in to make way for developments. And unfortunately, I think some of the agencies charged with looking out for the public interest and protecting these resources, and in this case with Trestle Creek, the Army Corps of Engineers, which has to issue permits for filling wetlands and dredging wetlands, they just like rubber stamped a permit to the Idaho Club and never actually sent anyone out there to delineate the wetlands or see what was going on. And so we threatened the Army Corps with a court challenge of the permit that they issued to the Idaho Club for the Trestle Creek project. And as a result, the Army Corps suspended that permit. It's unclear if the Idaho Club is going to pursue a new permit. But that is a very unique site. It's not like there's a bunch of other sites around the lake that are like Trestle Creek. And so it's a very unique and rare resource that we have there, and those are the kinds of things that We need to protect through better land use planning and better agency oversight.
It seems like there's a lot of keeping track and keeping your eyes on the prize. I was going to ask you about the Army Corps because I know in the past, developing a wetland was an arduous process for permits and things like that. And you caught them rubber stamping this project. So thank you.
Yes.
And that was my question about where does the Army Corps come in to protect those wetlands?
Yeah, so one of the provisions of the Clean Water Act is that these wetland areas that the federal government has jurisdiction over, if you want to fill them, you have to get a permit from the Army Corps of Engineers. And the Clean Water Act says that you should first try to avoid doing that. And if you can't avoid filling those wetlands for your project proposal, then you have to do offsite mitigation. And that's usually done through what's called wetland mitigation banking. And in this case, they didn't even require the Idaho Club to purchase credits at a wetland bank. So, you know, that's where the Idaho Conservation League and the Center for Biological Diversity, which also partnered with us on this, and Lake Pondere Waterkeeper when Steve was still working. You know, that's really what we see our role as being the watchdog to make sure that the agencies follow the law and protect our environment.
Mm-hmm. So what's a good outcome for Trestle Creek? I mean, they have invested a lot of money.
Yeah.
How do you see it playing out?
Again, I'm not sure if the Idaho Club intends to apply for another permit for their project, but the best thing that could happen at the mouth of Trestle Creek is for that site to be permanently preserved for the fish and the wildlife species that are there. You know, if they could find another site to develop their marina that would have less of an impact, that would be ideal. You know, I will be the first to admit I enjoy boating. I enjoy water recreation on the lake and fishing, and people need a place to launch their boats and park their boats. But Trestle Creek is so unique and rare and special that it is just not the right place. And so, again, the ideal outcome there would be that that site would be preserved in a conservation easement in perpetuity for the fish and the birds that roost out there and the beavers and all the wildlife species that use that area.
So let's move just a little bit north, Pack River Delta. There was a bunch of restoration work that occurred there. I don't know if you're up to speed on the history there. I'm not very much myself, but what kind of shape is that in?
You know, so we have two major deltas coming into the lake, Pack River, of course, and then also the Clark Fork Delta. And with the construction of Albany Falls Dam, we keep the lake level 11 feet above its natural pool throughout the summer, and that's for flood control and water-based recreation. But that has come at a cost to places like the Pack River Delta and the Clark Fork Delta. Out at the Clark Fork Delta, which I'm more familiar with, about 15 acres of that are lost every year to shoreline erosion because of keeping that the lake level artificially high all summer long in the wave action that just beats against those islands out there. And then, of course, we have upstream dams like Cabinet Gorge that hold back all the sediment that would normally be coming down and settling out and recharging those islands and wetlands in the deltas. But recognizing Albany Falls Dam is probably not going away anytime soon, Idaho Fish and Game has undertaken a couple of restoration projects in each of the deltas. So the department did some restoration work out at the Pack River Delta before my time in this office.
Yeah, that's but 10, 12, 15 years ago,
least,
probably.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of replicated that same work in the Clark Fork Delta.
Much more recently.
Much
fact,
more
it's
recently.
Still undergoing, in process right now. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so one of the islands out there, I think it's Durr Island. I'd have to go back and look at the map. But the department undertook a huge project where they they went out there and like kind of regraded the island and then did some work to protect the shorelines from erosion, and we planted a whole bunch of native vegetation. So ICL, the department came to ICL and asked if we would help recruit volunteers. And so we helped recruit a bunch of volunteers to go out and plant thousands of shrubs and grasses and things like that to protect that resource. And it'll be interesting to see if Idaho Fish and Game chooses to do more work out at the Clark Fork, because there are, of course, other islands out there that probably need some work as well.
There's so many things to talk about with what's going on with the lake. We are going to run out of time here, but I did want to ask about the proposed Rock Creek mine. Now, that's an issue that the Rock Creek Alliance has been working on for 25 years. They just had their 25th anniversary. And the issue there is this proposed mine could introduce a lot of heavy metals. It's just a little bit upstream of Lake Pendere. Do you see ICL engaging on that?
I remember riding a chairlift at Schweitzer when I was in high school and seeing stickers on the lift towers that said "Stop the Rock Creek Mine." So it seems to be the issue that never goes away. But that said, Jim and Mary Costello with the Rock Creek Alliance have just done a tremendous job over the years keeping that mine from coming to fruition. And in fact, the plan of operations for that mine was withdrawn as a result of a court case that the Rock Creek Alliance brought, I think, about 3 or 4 years ago. So at the moment, that mine, there are no plans to develop that mine. I don't know if Hecla will come forward with a new plan of operations. They would have to get a permit from the Forest Service and from the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. But the Rock Creek Alliance, I mean, props to them. They are solely responsible for keeping this mine from happening and impacting our waterways. And, you know, I stay in touch with Mary and Jim, but right now Rock Creek Alliance is just killing it. So there's no need for ICL to step in and take charge.
And that's also an across the border issue, of course, you know, because the mine would occur in Montana.
Yep.
Speaking of heavy metal pollution in lakes, part of your new position, I presume, is going to be working on Lake Coeur d'Alene as well?
That is true.
Which is the biggest Superfund site in the country because of all the historic mining pollution that's come into it. How do you get your arms around that?
Well, it's actually really good timing to be able to get my arms around it, because the National Academy of Sciences recently produced a study that shows that there's still a lot of work to do, and it helps to identify some of the measures that can be taken to help clean up Lake Coeur d'Alene. What we've done so far this summer is we weighed in on the change of leadership of the management plan for the cleanup. Panhandle Health District used to oversee portions of that cleanup, and that's being shifted to the Department of Environmental Quality. And so there's a new statute, a new state law that's being developed, and we were able to participate in that process and give some input on what that should look like. And really, a really important part of that work is to keep this information available to the public and keep the process open to the public. But yes, we do still have a lot of work to do to really define how we can be most effective in a cohesive way in that watershed. It's a big job, and there's a lot going on closer to home as well.
Yeah, and it's very serious. You know, you see a beautiful lake, the sparkling Lake Coeur d'Alene looks great. But in the sediments, there are heavy metal pollutions that are actually very hazardous for people to expose kids to or so on. In fact, I was on a bike ride down the trail of the Coeur d'Alenes in springtime, and I was seeing all these dead swans. And that was due to them getting into the polluted sediment and getting poisoned from it. So, serious thing. I think we got to wrap it up. Brad Smith, Jennifer Ekstrom, Idaho Conservation League. You want to throw in any last words here?
I do, thanks. I'll be really quick, but it's super important that people mark their calendars for, unfortunately, December 21st for a super important hearing at Bonner County Commissioner's Office. They're going to be doing a hearing on December 21st about the comprehensive plan, about the implementation section, which is the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan. That section of our comprehensive plan is going to guide new county codes, which are basically the laws that our county is ruled by. And that applies to shoreline development as far as quality of life in general and protection of our natural resources. So far, the county commission has tried to absolve themselves of protecting our natural resources and deflecting that responsibility to other agencies, but they have a really important role that they need to play. And so I encourage people, if you at all possibly can, mark your calendars for December 21st, right before the holidays, to weigh in on this really important issue. I'm super hopeful about working with our new county commission that's going to come on board in January.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say that next Wednesday, we're going to be talking with Susan Drumheller with Project 7B about both Camp Bay and that upcoming hearing. So that's also a very important issue. It was on our list to talk about more here today as well, but there's so many things to talk about with the lake. So Brad and Jennifer, thanks so much for coming in today.
Thank you for having us.
Yep, it was riveting.